Good evening. You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. From the Miami Herald, Miami, Florida, June 29, 1994. ADL launches book against religious right by Peggy Landers, Herald religious writer. Art Teitelbaum minced no words Tuesday in blasting a contingent of the religious right for using what he called murderously mean tactics. Murderously mean tactics in pursuing an exclusionist and dangerous political agenda, particularly in Florida. The Anti-Defamation League's Southern Area Director called a news conference at his downtown office to announce the distribution of a 190-page National Anti-Defamation League report called The Religious Right, The Assault on Tolerance and Pluralism in America. The book, which costs $7.50 and is available through the Miami ADL office, is the result of a year-long national research project to document what its authors call a bitter push to replace the wall of separation of church and state with a citadel of Christianity, while suggesting that those who defend the walls are enemies of God. Well, it sounds like at least they know who they are. It warns that the religious right is seeking to Christianize public school curricula and gain control of the Republican Party. Florida has become a lightning rod state for grassroots campaigns to return prayer to public schools, oppose abortion, elect Christian candidates, and oppose civil rights protections for homosexuals, Teitelbaum said. Florida represents in many of its communities what America will be like in the year 2000 in cultural diversity and changing demographics. The state's future depends on our success in being a multicultural society, he said. He pointed to the murder of Dr. David Gunn by religious anti-abortion activists in Pensacola. I wonder why he didn't point to any of the murders committed by the ADL. The success in Lake County of Christian fundamentalist school board members in mandating that public school students be taught that American culture is superior to all others. And the American Family Association's initiative to block civil rights protections for homosexuals as religious right activities in Florida. Folks, what they call protections for homosexuals are really the granting of rights to homosexuals that no one else has, and that should never be allowed. Teitelbaum warned of stealth candidates who hide their religious objectives in the possibility of religious tests for political office. If he's a Christian, vote for him. If he's not, don't. But Raul Molina, director of the Dade County chapter of the Christian Coalition, says such claims are inaccurate and mean-spirited. The 1.2 million members of the Christian Coalition are people of faith who have felt disenfranchised and underrepresented and want to have a voice in our country's government, Molina said. We are a political movement based on issues, not on religious doctrines. It's the liberals in organizations such as the Anti-Defamation League that are attempting to censor us and take away our voice in government. They are the ones who are intolerant and exclusionary. Amen. On February the 28th, 1986, Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme was assassinated by a lone gunman on the streets of Stockholm. Just before his assassination, Palme was in the process of cracking down on Swedish arms dealers who were funneling guns to the Nicaraguan Contras and to the Iranian regime. Shades of Ali North. The Iran-Contra scandal had not yet broken publicly, and Palme's probe threatened to blow the lid on the entire covert program of the Israeli Mossad, B'nai B'rith, the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, the Anti-Defamation League, and, of course, the American Intelligence Network. Curiously, many of the guns being sold by the Swedes with the collusion of Oliver North, the CIA Chief William Casey, and the Israelis were coming from East Germany and other Soviet bloc states. Are you beginning to understand the implications? Was Palme in the process of unearthing a cynical East-West collusion, as I have warned you about previously? An even nastier reality buried beneath the then unknown Iran Gate scandal? Was he about to blow the lid on the phony Cold War? Had he inadvertently stumbled onto the trail of the Anti-Defamation League's own involvement in this demi-monde of gun and drug dealing? Absolutely, ladies and gentlemen. Absolutely. The answer to that question was implicitly given within days of the Palme assassination, when the Anti-Defamation League joined with the KGB and the East German Stasi, State Security Service, in an effort to blame the Palme murder on Swedish associates of Lyndon LaRouche, who had already exposed all of their dirty dealing. ADL Fact-Finding Division Chief Erwin Sewell, himself an Oxford University-trained active member of the Socialist International, an alumni of our President William Clinton, personally flew to Stockholm to fuel the disinformation campaign linking LaRouche to the Palme murder. Soviet Ambassador Boris Pankin, a major general in the KGB who specialized in planting disinformation in the Western press, directed the Soviet side of the LaRouche-killed Palme hoax, while Georgi E. Arbatov, the head of the Soviet Academy of Sciences, USA-Canada Institute, added his voice to those accusing LaRouche. Ultimately, the Soviet government-owned TV network aired an hour-long docudrama elaborating this lie. And it was a lie. The role of Edgar Bronfman's pals in the East German Stasi in the Palme cover-up would not surface until 3 years later. However, back in August of 1989, the Stockholm daily newspaper, Expression, revealed that Swedish police had bugged the home of a resident KGB agent and had audio tape evidence that the man knew at least 24 hours before Palme's murder that the Prime Minister would be killed. This alone absolved Lyndon LaRouche. The pivotal role of the Stasi in the Palme murder cover-up was first revealed in the August 20 through 26, 1992 edition of Journalisten, the magazine of the Swedish Journalist Association, which published an interview with a former top Stasi officer named Herbert Bremer. In that interview, ladies and gentlemen, and in a series of subsequent Swedish nationwide radio broadcasts, Bremer confessed that as an official of Department X, which is disinformation of the Stasi, he personally had engineered the disinformation campaign blaming the European Labour Party, ELP, the Scandinavian affiliations of Lyndon LaRouche for the Palme murder. Bremer told Journalisten, quote, At my desk, I drew up the outlines of how the ELP theory would be conduit into the Swedish police investigation. The plan was to have a national Swedish newspaper receive an anonymous telephone tip-off. As an alternative, the information would go directly to one of the special tip-off phones made available by the police. The content would be along the lines that the caller, quote, knew that the ELP had committed the crime, end quote. In addition, he or she had, quote, witnessed hectic activity in the ELP headquarters in the night, end quote. Nothing was really true, but it sounded well-informed and credible, end quote. Indeed, the 1986 Stasi-manufactured disinformation was conduited into the United States media through the Anti-Defamation League. NBC Television ran the story as a leading news item on their evening news broadcast, interviewing Anti-Defamation League official Sewell as part of their coverage, just as they conducted repeated interviews with Anti-Defamation League officials and officials of the Cult Awareness Network, another branch of the B'nai B'rith, during the Waco massacre. Ultimately, the United States Justice Department would use the Palm disinformation to justify a massive paramilitary police raid against LaRouche's home and offices of his associates in Leesburg, Virginia in October 1986, resulting in a tremendous miscarriage of justice. Am I a supporter of Lyndon LaRouche? Not on your life, ladies and gentlemen, for he himself is a closet socialist masquerading as a conservative. The LaRouche killed Palm hoax was no isolated instance of Edgar Bronfman and the ADL teaming up with a communist secret police agency to target a political enemy or ply a lucrative business scam. It is, and always has been, and will be, unless you stop it, standard operating procedure for the Anti-Defamation League. According to syndicated columnists Rowland Evans and Robert Novak, on January 23, 1989, Bronfman hosted a secret meeting at his New York City penthouse to forge what the columnists dubbed, quote, a Jews for grain, end quote, deal between the Soviet Union and Israel. Also present at the gathering was Duanes Andreas, the chairman of the Archer Daniels Midland ADM grain cartel and a long-standing ally and financial backer of the Anti-Defamation League. The Wall Street Journal had dubbed Andreas Gorbachev's closest pal in the West. At congressional hearings, Andreas identified former Anti-Defamation League National Chairman Ben Epstein as the man who taught him all he knew about politics. The Bronfman-Andreas deal was straightforward in return for vast quantities of dirt-cheap grain from ADM and other United States-based grain cartels. The Soviet government would permit the mass exodus of Soviet Jews to Israel. It was an updated version of the Pollard espionage affair in which United States military secrets were swapped for controlled Soviet Jewish migration to Israel. The invariant in the two efforts was the central role of the ADL. Now, I'd like to ask all of you out there who claim that the Soviet Union is controlled by Jews, why are so many Jews immigrating from the Soviet Union? I know the answer, but I bet you don't. As part of the Bronfman-Andreas deal, the Soviet KGB teamed up with the ADL and Bronfman's World Jewish Congress, the WJC, to foment a diplomatic breach between the Reagan administration and Austrian President Kurt Waldheim, the former Secretary General of the United Nations. The KGB manufactured and the ADL-WJC conduited phony evidence that the Waldheim had been a top Nazi war criminal during World War II. The United States Attorney General Ed Meese, still employing the legal services of Anti-Defamation League fellow traveler, that's right folks, fellow traveler, Leonard Garment, bit on the forged material and declared Waldheim persona non grata in the United States. The purpose of the smear job was to shut down Austria as a way station for Soviet Jews coming out into the West. In the past, once Soviet Jews landed on Austrian soil, they were granted political refugee status, which then enabled them to settle in any country of their choosing. The majority either stayed in Western Europe or found their way to the United States. Very few went to Israel voluntarily. With Austria shut down, Bronfman and Gorbachev worked out alternative routes through Warsaw Pact states and eventually set up direct flights from the Soviet Union to Israel to ensure that the Soviet refugees had no choice as to where they would live. By the time Bronfman and Andreas forged their Jews for Grain deal with Gorbachev in early 1989, the ADL had just about perfected their use of forged KGB documents to smear the entire Eastern European community in the United States as closet wartime Nazis. As early as 1979, the ADL had played a pivotal role in getting legislation through the United States Congress establishing the Office of Special Investigations, OSI, a special Nazi hunting unit inside the criminal division of the Justice Department directly against, ladies and gentlemen, all of our laws, our ethics, and our morals. This, in fact, was direct recognition of one specific religion against the Constitution of the United States of America, specifically to reap revenge upon their imagined enemies. ADL asset representative Elizabeth Holtzman had sponsored the bill, which effectively stripped naturalized American citizens of Central European and Ukrainian descent of their constitutional rights by providing for automatic denaturalization and deportation without any due process whatsoever if the OSI could produce evidence that they had been tied to the Nazis during World War II. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, the Supreme Court has ruled that no one can strip an American citizen of their citizenship. Period. For any reason. Yet they do it. And you sit out there and don't say a word. And where did the lion's share of this evidence come from? 40 years after the end of World War II, from the Soviet archives, ladies and gentlemen. And how were they getting information from the Soviet archives, the communist nation behind an iron curtain, supposedly our bitter enemy? The ADL-sponsored OSI provided Moscow with a foot in the door to the American judicial system. For the first time ever, Soviet documents and witnesses were given full standing in United States court proceedings, no questions asked. The enemies of the United States of America, bound by their vows and oaths of office to the Soviet Union, publicly declared their goal is to destroy the United States of America. While a handful of the people targeted by the ADL-OSI may have been low-level Nazi sympathizers or assets during the war, many innocent people fell victim to the KGB's sophisticated forgers, courtesy of the Anti-Defamation League and their friends at the Justice Department's OSI. And what was the purpose of this? To keep the Jews in line by continually whipping them with the threat of another Nazi Holocaust. That's what. To maintain their power. That's what. Remember the man who was sent to Israel and tried and found guilty and then tried again and found innocent. And all the time, the Justice Department and the OSI and the ADL and everyone concerned with this knew that he was innocent. And then they wanted to hold him until they could scrape up some other phony evidence and try him again on some other charges not yet imagined. And all of you sat and said nothing. And why did you sit and say nothing? Because you're a bunch of whimpering, scared little sheep. You were afraid that someone would call you anti-Semitic. I would much rather be called anti-Semitic than be called a coward. And that's what most of you are. Carl Linus, falsely accused of Nazi collaboration, was stripped of his American citizenship and shipped off to the Soviet Union, where he died in a prison, reportedly from a heart attack. Sherem Zubzikov, accused of working with the Nazis in his native Belarusia, beat the OSI and even won a lucrative out-of-court libel suit against the New York Times. He was then murdered by a Jewish Defense League bomb attack on his Paterson, New Jersey home in 1985 because he had thwarted them and embarrassed them publicly. Dr. Arthur Rudolph, a celebrated German-American rocket scientist who contributed greatly to America's space program, was falsely accused by the Anti-Defamation League and OSI of torturing Jews at the Peenemünde research facility in wartime Germany. Rather than lose his lifetime pension with the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, and throw his family into poverty, he renounced his United States citizenship and returned to West Germany. After a three-year probe based on the same evidence passed on by the East German and Soviet authorities to the OSI, West German prosecutors concluded that there was no evidence against Dr. Rudolph. But by that time, his life was in ruins. John Demjanjuk, a Ukrainian-American retired auto worker, accused of being the Treblinka concentration camp mass murderer Ivan the Terrible, was stripped of his citizenship and hauled off to Israel to stand trial. It was the biggest show trial since the proceedings against Adolf Eichmann, broadcast in its entirety, live on Israeli national television. Demjanjuk was convicted and sentenced to death by hanging. Through unflagging efforts by his family and friends, Demjanjuk eventually gathered evidence showing that the OSI had suppressed evidence proving that another man had been identified as the real Ivan. They knew all along that he was innocent and were prepared to allow him to go to his death rather than buck the ADL, B'nai B'rith, the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry in the State of Israel. They were afraid of being called anti-Semitic. They are cowards. The case is now pending before both the Israeli Supreme Court and the United States Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in Cincinnati, Ohio. The ADL's liaison to OSI, Elliot Wells, in a signed letter to the editors of the Washington Post, demanded that Demjanjuk not be set free, using the kind of stilted, stupid logic that would make the KGB blush. Wells argued that even if Demjanjuk is innocent of the Treblinka charges, he must be guilty of some other war crimes and therefore should be held in custody until new evidence can be manufactured. And they're so used to getting away with this kind of ploy that it's actually a miracle that nobody listened. And I mean, ladies and gentlemen, a genuine miracle. In 1974, Richard Nixon went down for the count as the result of the botched Watergate break-in at the Democratic National Committee headquarters in Washington, D.C. during the 1972 presidential campaign. A prominent Central Intelligence Agency operative who was involved in the Watergate break-in G. Gordon Liddy is now a prominent radio talk show host, and all you stupid sheeple idolize his every word. As reporters, congressional committees, and special prosecutors pored over the details of the Watergate scandal, evidence of a pattern of bribery and cover-ups emerged that ended up contributing to Nixon's resignation even more than the break-in itself. You see, folks, they never had anything that could have impeached Richard Nixon. Since the fall of Nixon, the American political lexicon has been blessed with such Watergate offspring as, quote, Debategate, end quote, Cartergate, Irangate, Bushgate, Iraqgate, and even Spacegate. And we'll talk about Spacegate on another program to do with mind control. Political corruption scandals have become as American as apple pie, ladies and gentlemen. And we'll get to that in just a moment. Despite the growing addiction to political sleaze, the vast majority of Americans are totally oblivious to the fact that on any given day, the Anti-Defamation League and its fellow hooligans in what is euphemistically dubbed the Zionist lobby, the dope lobby, is a far more appropriate description. Commit crimes against the American electorate that make Watergate seem tame by comparison. Blackmail, extortion, and bribery, ladies and gentlemen, are such routine tactics of the Zionist lobby that its primary target victims, the United States Senate and House of Representatives, filled with cowards, have been turned into political mush, incapable of governing under the best of circumstances, and completely paralyzed in the face of the current political and economic crises. How do you think we got to the point where we are at now? While the media had led the charge against congressional incumbents, appealing to a justified throw-the-bums-out sentiment building among the majority of voters, the sad reality is that unless the power of the Zionist lobby is cut down to size, any newly elected Congress will be like a bunch of silly lambs walking to the slaughter, and nothing, nothing, nothing will ever change. You see, they hold this Holocaust and anti-Semitic bullshit over everybody's head. And everybody, being the stupid sheeple that they are, they cower in fear in the corner. Officially, both the ADL and its leading collaborator in this corrupting of the Congress, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, are forbidden from engaging in political campaigning due to their tax-exempt status. But both groups have managed to systematically break the electoral and tax laws with impunity, largely due to the fact that they have placed fellow travelers, that's right, I said fellow travelers, in key posts in the executive branch regulatory agencies that are supposed to monitor the activities of groups benefiting from the tax exemptions. The Federal Election Commission, FEC, and the Internal Revenue Service. Just a glimpse at how the Zionist lobby has used the power of the narco dollar to corrupt and control the Congress is contained in a lawsuit filed in federal court in Washington, D.C. on August 10, 1992. Get it, read it. The suit filed by a group of retired United States diplomats against the FEC charges that the agency failed to impose sanctions against the AIPAC for functioning as an unregistered political action committee. Even though the general counsel at the FEC agreed that AIPAC had violated the law, the commissioners decided in July 1992 not to take any action against the group. According to the court papers, AIPAC secretly controls at least 27 different political action committees, or PACs. Other investigators place the figure at 59 and uses them to funnel enormous amounts of money to candidates for Congress who support AIPAC's political agenda. Under the FEC statutes, strict limits are imposed on how much money can be given to an individual candidate by a single PAC. The purpose of the regulation is to curb the power of special interest groups in the financing of candidates, but as you can see, it does not work. By running dozens of PACs, AIPAC, according to the suit, illegally circumvents the law. And they're not the only ones. The case of the Joint Action Committee for Political Affairs, or JACPAC, one of the 27 PACs named in the suit, underscores the tight relationship between AIPAC, the ADL, and the political committees. JPAC lists among its directors the wives of Thomas Dine and Stuart Eisenstadt. Since 1980, Dine has been the executive director of AIPAC. Eisenstadt, formerly domestic policy advisor to President Jimmy Carter, is the head of the National Jewish Democratic Council, or NJDC, an ADL-dominated organization dedicated to winning control over the Democratic Party and placing as many of its members as possible on the staffs of congressmen, governors, and mayors. Why does it want to put its members on the staffs of congressmen, governors, and mayors instead of in the office of congressman, governor, or mayor? Simply because, folks, congressmen, governors, and mayors don't write anything. They very seldom even read what has been introduced. So these people write the law, and the congressman, never reading any of the law, just endorse it and go right on along with it. That's why many times when you call your congressman and confront them with something you found in a bill, they profess ignorance. You know why? Because it's the truth. They don't know their ass from a hole in the ground. And where does all of the money come from to buy up the hundreds of congressional seats currently owned by ADL, AIPAC? A brief look at the Round Table PAC, one of the 27 outfits cited in the lawsuit as AIPAC owned, answers that question. Roundtable PAC was founded in 1981 by a group of leading ADL and AIPAC officials and contributors, led by Malcolm Holine, the head of the Jewish Community Relations Council of New York. From day one, it was housed in the Manhattan offices of a tax shelter firm called the Integrated Resources. And Integrated was a thinly veiled money conduit for Michael Milken and his crew of junk bond peddlers and dope money washers at Drexel Burnham. In fact, Drexel CEO Stephen Weinroth, the liaison between Milken and Ivan Boesky in their insider trading scams, was a director of Integrated. All, ladies and gentlemen, all of Milken's prime investors socked their money into Integrated as a tax dodge. All of them also poured contributions into the Roundtable PAC. Among the biggest donors to Roundtable, Ivan Boesky, Robert Davido, Milken's personal aide at the Beverly Hills office of Drexel, and the sons and daughters of Meshulam Riklis, remember him? Lawrence Tisch, Saul Steinberg, and Paul Milstein of Carl Lidner's United Brands. When the Roundtable PAC holds its meetings, guests of honor include respectively New York and Minnesota attorneys General Robert Abrams and Skip Humphrey and New York Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who is one of the biggest traitors on Capitol Hill. All are regular recipients of AIPAC PAC dollars. In return for such generosity, Senator Moynihan in 1986 shepherded a tax code revision through the United States Congress that gave Integrated Resources and added $43 million in tax breaks. Don't you wish you had friends like that? With friends like Moynihan in key posts in the United States Senate, Integrated could afford to be generous, at least for a while. The relationship between Milken and Integrated was so tight that within 3 months of Milken's indictment in March 1989 for insider trading, Integrated defaulted on $1 billion in short-term loans. It seems that without the running pipeline of hot money from Milken's bottomless Caribbean cash pool, Integrated was lost, because the truth is, it never did anything except wash money. The AIPAC ADL-run political action committees, in short, represent the combined financial clout of the Lansky Dope Syndicate. Any similarity between Anti-Defamation League, AIPAC, and the genuine national interests of the State of Israel or the Jewish people is purely crap. Absolute horse manure. All told, 211 candidates for the United States House and Senate from 48 states received money from the ADL-AIPAC PACs between January 1, 1991 and March 31, 1992. Of the 211 recipients, 187 were incumbents. The total amount given in that 15-month period was well over $2 million, making ADL-AIPAC the second largest source of institutional money to candidates for federal office, second only to the combined donations of all of the labor union PACs. And they're all in bed together. By October 1992, that figure had soared past the $3 million mark. The ADL-AIPAC PACs don't funnel the majority of their money into Jewish candidates or even into candidates running for office in states where there are large Jewish populations. Are you listening to me? If you're Jewish, you had better be learning from this program, from this series of broadcasts. Or will you continue along as you always have been, afraid that your friends and neighbors will call you anti-Semitic? And they will, you know. Takes guts to be a real people instead of a stupid sheeple, no matter who or what you are. More typical of the kinds of office holders and candidates who receive AIPAC payoffs is Richard C. Shelby, a first-term Democratic United States Senator from Alabama, who has recently gained notoriety for pushing a death penalty bill for the District of Columbia. Shelby received $67,800 from the AIPAC PACs in the 15 months beginning in January 1991 with a career total of $133,825. Another record-setting recipient of AIPAC largesse is Senator Tom Harkin, the Iowa Democrat, who ran an unsuccessful bid for the Democratic presidential nomination in 1992. Harkin came into the Senate in 1984 by defeating incumbent Roger Jepson, who in 1981 had cast a decisive vote against AIPAC in a fight over the sale of AWACS surveillance aircraft to Saudi Arabia. In his first Senate bid, Harkin received over $100,000 from the AIPAC combine. His career total in AIPAC money is a staggering $366,130. And we are accurate to the penny. A total of 29 current incumbent senators and congressmen have received over $100,000 in illegal contributions from the ADL-AIPAC PACs. A dozen have received $50,000 or more dollars just for their 1992 reelection campaigns. That, quote, dirty dozen, end quote, are Richard Shelby, Democrat, Alabama, Mel Levine, Democrat, California, Timothy Wirth, Democrat, Colorado, Daniel Inouye, Democrat, Hawaii, Barbara Mikulski, Democrat, Maryland, Christopher Bond, Republican, Montana, Kent Conrad, Democrat, North Dakota, Robert Packwood, Republican, Oregon, Arlen Specter, Republican, Pennsylvania, Harris Wolford, Democrat, Pennsylvania, Thomas Daschle, Democrat, South Dakota, and Robert Kasten, Republican, Wisconsin. Narco dollars, dope money. Narco dollars are the key to the ADL's hold over the United States Congress, but the League and its AIPAC associates have other trump cards as well. Both groups operate secret, highly illegal spy units that gather blackmail material and carry out dirty tricks against political opponents. When Richard Nixon got caught running such a plumber's unit at the offices of the Committee to Reelect the President, CREEP, aptly named, in 1972, the American people demanded his scalp. It remains to be seen what the reaction will be now that AIPAC has had its first damaging defection from its own plumber's unit. You see, Gregory Slobodkin worked for a number of years in AIPAC's policy analysis unit. Slobodkin eventually got turned off by some of the dirty deeds he was ordered to carry out by the unit's chief, Michael Lewis, and he quit his job and went public with his story. Not surprisingly, Michael Lewis is the son of Dr. Bernard Lewis, the Oxford-trained, always coming back to the same places, Oxford-trained Arabist who was the architect of the Carter administration's arc of crisis policy, which abetted Ayatollah Khomeini's Islamic revolution in Iran and the spread of fundamentalism throughout the region. Policy analysis, the super euphemistic name given to AIPAC's plumbers, maintains dossiers on thousands of American activists, many of them Jewish. Many of them Jewish. University professors who criticize AIPAC or the Anti-Defamation League's activities are placed on a blacklist and labeled anti-Semitic. Their lectures are monitored by spies who occasionally stage noisy disruptions. Their homes and cars are vandalized. University alumni linked to ADL and AIPAC threaten to pull financial backing from the schools unless the targeted faculty members are immediately fired or blocked from tenure. And every day, Americans turn their heads because they are afraid that someone will call them anti-Semitic. The Anti-Defamation League has learned to use this label to get whatever they want from whomever they want, whenever they want. Members of Congress are cast as either friends or targets of the ADL, AIPAC. There is no in-between. If they are on the friendlies list, they may be the recipients of weekly computerized blackmail dossiers on some of their colleagues and other policy shapers, which are called activities. Remember lately, folks, in San Francisco when the ADL was caught red-handed operating a spy ring from inside the police department, gathering information on Americans? When the investigation began, it was found that they were doing this across the country, infiltrating supposedly secure records system, collecting information on American citizens to use against them. How long are you going to put up with this bullshit from these creep lying scumbags? The activities dossiers are sent out in plain white envelopes bearing no organizational emblems. Deniability is a priority, and the whole filthy blackmail and extortion program was 100% deniable until Slobotkin's defection, complete with reams of AIPAC documents which proved it. AIPAC's unit maintains a singularly close link to the ADL's parallel fact-finding department, which engages in the exact same kind of activity. In fact, shortly after Thomas Dine took over as executive director of AIPAC, he hired Amy Goot as the first full-time staffer of the policy analysis unit. Goot had worked for years at the ADL. Her shift of address was apparently blessed by her bosses at the League, and she continued for a period of time to work for both agencies, thereby assuring near total integration in the covert operations level. One feature, ladies and gentlemen, of the job that ultimately got under Gregory Slobotkin's skin was the fact that many of his targets were themselves prominent Jewish activists, usually affiliated with left-wing causes in both the United States and Israel. See all you silly people out there who think it's the Jews. You're off your rocker. And the ADL does not work for Jews or in the interest of Jews and never has. Neither does B'nai B'rith. I don't know how many letters I've gotten from you stupid jerks out there who think you're going to solve all the world's problems by killing all the Jews. How stupid. Most Jews don't know any more about what's going on than you sheeple did before I told you. And then most of you will never know if it's true or not because you won't get off your butt and go check it out. You see what a state of affairs we've sunk to? A nation out of control, run by scumbags, with an agenda emanating from deep inside the secret societies of the mystery schools. Right under the noses of the sleeping watchdog, the American people, who are so ignorant, stupid, and apathetic that anybody that wants can get away with anything that they want at any time that they want. And they can tell any lie that they want because they know
that you will believe whatever they tell you, and you'll never check anything out. For all you know, I might be one of them. I might be sitting here telling you lie after lie after lie, and you won't get off your ass and go check it out. It's too hard, and I'm just one lonely little person. I don't have the capabilities to check anything out. Boy, I hear that all the time. Hear it all the time. God, I must be some super spirit from some foreign planet. I must have the biggest brain in the world. I must have some secret access to every source of information that there is. Because I'm just one lonely little old helpless individual, and I'm busy too, and I got a family to run. And I don't have any more time than any one of you out there has. So when you spout that bullshit at me, I just know that's another stupid sheeple standing in front of me that's too damn lazy. And that's the truth of the matter. Many of these people that Slobodkin was supposed to target, many of them were simply outspoken critics of the Israeli Likud government's brutality toward the Palestinians living in the occupied territories. Many simply favored a peaceful and equitable solution to the Arab-Israeli conflict. Many of these Jewish activists were treated to the same violence and vicious smearing by the ADL-AIPAC that was meted out to Palestine Liberation Organizations, or PLO, officials. This McCarthyite targeting of prominent Jews who simply bucked the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, on some policy issue or financial deal underscores the fact that the League and AIPAC are anything but Jewish defense organizations. They are, in fact, liars, deceivers, and manipulators. And whether you believe it or not, most of their victims are innocent Jews, many of them patriots, who love this country and love the Constitution and the Bill of Rights just as much as any of you listening out there. Put that in your pipe and smoke it, Major Clerken. Good night, folks, and God bless you all. Seek ye the truth, and the truth will make you free. Nothing else will or can do it.